Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm your host for today, Ursula Rudenberg. Thank you for listening in. For the first part of this week, we're talking sun, sun, and more sun. Days won't be chilly, with temperatures in the high 40s, but at nights, thermometers should drop down into the low 30s and 20s, so don't be fooled, it is still winter. In fact, snow is currently being predicted for Thursday night. We'll see if that happens. In any case, rain is predicted for Thursday, which is expected to turn into snow as the afternoon wears on. Friday should be cold, with temperatures dropping down to around 14 degrees at night. The weekend looks to be partly sunny, but cold. Here's a roundup of Iowa in the news last week, brought to you by the Iowa Informer, iowainformer.com. Paul Trombino III, the former director of the Iowa Department of Transportation, who in September was nominated by President Trump to lead the Federal Highway Administration, has removed his name from consideration for the appointment, citing family reasons. After many conversations with my family, we have decided that it is best that I withdraw from the nomination process, he wrote in an email to his employees on December 8th, according to the Associated Press. Iowa is my home and I need to be here for what likely will be the last 2 years or less of my father's life. Trombino was appointed by Iowa Governor Terry Branstad to lead the Iowa Department of Transportation in 2011, and in 2015 and 16, he served as president of the American Association of State Highway and Transportation Officials. After Trump's election, Trombino unexpectedly left his Department of Transportation position and became president of the Clive-based McClure Engineering Company. A 19-year-old Buena Vista University student was arrested last week on a criminal mischief charge for allegedly writing racist messages and symbols on dorm room doors. Buena Vista University is in Storm Lake. The student, former Buena Vista University football player Ryan Mills, targeted two African-American students and Latino students, as well as two white students. His motivation appeared to have to do with a recent controversy over the nationwide national anthem protests against racial injustice that began in 2016 when San Francisco 49er quarterback Kaepernick kneeled in protest of police brutality. Alyssa Parker, a former football cheerleader who left the team after university officials prohibited kneeling during the national anthem, reported finding the N-word scrawled on her door. Meanwhile, Iowa was featured prominently in a recent New York Times article exploring how chanting Trump, Trump, Trump has become a, quote, racial jeer. The article mentioned the two Forest City radio station employees who were fired after they were caught making offensive comments about the Latino-sounding names of high school basketball players from rival Eagle Grove. On the Monday after the Alabama special election to decide who would fill the Senate seat of Jeff Sessions, former Iowa Congressman Jim Nussel, a Republican, took to Twitter to celebrate the defeat of the controversial right-wing Roy Moore. Russell served in the U.S. House of Representatives from 1991 to 2007. He left office to run for governor in 2006 against eventual Democrat victor Chet Culver. Afterward, Nussel was picked by President Bush to direct the Office of Management and Budget, where he served until 2009. Nussel is currently the president and CEO of the Credit Union National Association, with lobbies for public policies that support credit unions. After the recent victory of the Democratic Doug Jones in Alabama, he wrote on Twitter, "Strange feeling for a Republican lifer, however, best I've ever felt after a post-Democratic victory night in my lifetime. Thank you, Alabama, for momentarily saving GOP from themselves." Moore's Democratic opponent, attorney Doug Jones, was able to win in the deeply conservative state after a bombshell Washington Post report revealed that Moore pursued numerous relationships with teenagers while in his 30s and once allegedly molested a 14-year-old girl in his home. Iowa's ex-state senator Kent Sorensen, a Republican from Milo, lost an appeal last week to have his 15-month prison sentence reduced. Sorensen was sentenced in January after being found guilty of accepting a $73,000 bribe from three staffers for Ron Paul's presidential campaign in 2012 in exchange for his agreement to leave the Michelle Bachmann campaign and endorse Paul ahead of Iowa caucuses. Sorensen had served the Iowa House of Representatives from 2009 to 2011, representing District 74 and then representing District 37 in the Iowa Senate. Sorensen resigned from office in 2013 after Iowa's Senate Ethics Committee found, quote, probable cause, unquote, that Sorensen violated state ethics rules by taking payments from the campaigns in the 2012 Republican presidential primaries and that, quote, his denials of doing so constituted felonious misconduct in office, unquote. The former Iowa lawmaker had pleaded guilty to violating federal election law and making false statements during an Iowa Senate ethics investigation, but appealed his sentence soon after the verdict. Robert Pratt, the judge who sentenced Sorensen, called his actions, quote, the definition of political corruption, unquote. And that is some of last week's news from Iowa on the national front, provided by the Iowa Informer. For more news, go to iowainformer.com.
Standing on these mountains and plains, far away from the rolling ocean, still my dry land heart can say, I've been sailing all my life now, never harbor or port have I known. The wide universe is the ocean I travel, and the earth is my blue boat home. Sun, my sail, and moon, my rudder, as I ply the starry sea, leaning over the edge in one, casting questions into the deep, drifting here with my ship's companions, all we kindred pilgrim souls, making our way by the lights of the heavens in our beautiful blue boat.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm your host for today, Ursula Rudenberg. Thank you for listening. Tonight at 6 p.m., there will be a forum on CAFOs, or Concentrated Animal Feeding Operations, otherwise known as confinement lots, and water quality at the Ames City Auditorium. The forum is part of a series of forums occurring around the state being moderated by Kevin Techow, former U.S. Attorney for Northern District of Iowa. The forums are called CAFOs and Water Quality Issues in Iowa and include discussion and questions and answers about problems and solutions related to livestock. Panelists range from a former state senator to a CAFO owner to an Iowa Environmental Council board member, a board member of the Iowa Farmers Union, a former Iowa Department of Natural Resources employee, and many more experts. KHOI's Pat Schlarbaum, who has been involved with hosting the forum in Ames, brings us a report from Ralph Rosenberg, recently retired executive director of the Iowa Environmental Council and former state legislator. Rosenberg reflects on the importance of the issues that will be discussed on tonight's forum, as well as some of the practical steps the Iowa legislature will be considering in 2018.
Welcome to Local Talk, Ralph Rosenberg.
Thank you, Pat.
Previously the director of the Iowa Environmental Council, legislator of quite distinctive prominence, citizen of Ames, Iowa, citizen of the natural world.
Right, I am a private citizen. like everyone else, a citizen of the natural world and future children of the natural world, most importantly. It's not just and us. You know, I'll mention one person who just passed away because she needs a little mention. Judy Hoffman just passed away. Judy was a former city council person. Many people don't know that Judy was an exceptional advocate for the environment and natural resources. She really was very successful in the 80s and 90s and 2000s in fighting for water quality, including on issues from Matrix to Groundwater Protection Act. And Judy, being as humble as she was, many people don't know about that. But it's really important because it also shows hope for people and also shows what people can do at the local level. And we've had other very good city council people. She was just unique because she also lobbied in the legislature for groups like the League of Women Voters and other groups. A great loss, but a great life.
So you've touched on a few things. You mentioned a matrix.
Yes.
Let's talk about water.
Okay.
What are your leading environmental concerns?
My leading concerns overall are natural resource concerns, both soil, water, and energy concerns. It's in general. And my concerns are that people take it for granted or that politicians are taking it for granted, and it's not a higher enough issue. That I don't believe these problems are going to be solved on their own, solely in the free market. Maybe a balance, maybe partnership, but when it comes to things like CAFOs, when it comes to things like runoff into our rivers, the solutions are too slow when you just rely on a voluntary solution from our corn and bean farmers. In order to cure our problems, we have to have a long-term solution, and that government's going to play a large role. And that includes for issues like water or CAFOs. There's too small of a percentage of our agriculture community that are doing things. There are many who are doing a good job. I mean, you read the Des Moines Register, and you can read stories of individual farmers who are doing wonderful things to reduce the amount of fertilizer getting into our water and to protect our soil. You read about farmers doing filter strips and are minimizing or eliminating fall tile. A lot of free market farmers are doing wonderful stuff, but I think it's too slow. I think to get the scale of change we need, we have to do more, and we need people like a Secretary of Agriculture like Northey who also steps up. And one of my concerns is that free market, which is something that like Secretary Northey believes in, isn't going to be the sole solution. So when it comes to water, agriculture is about 80% of the problem. It's not the sole problem. I don't want your listeners to think that, but it is certainly the dominant problem.
What would be the first step, then, in addressing these environmental concerns?
Well, Pat, the first step, the most immediate step, is what's going to happen in January of 2018. The legislature is going to convene, and we'll be facing options to either accept a weak Senate version or a halfway decent House version of a water bill. I think the Senate bill has no accountability, has no emphasis on watersheds. The House bill is not perfect, but it has some accountability. It talks in terms of watersheds. In terms of we need a solution, we have to think about watersheds. And as we know, that's the way long-term solutions are going to be, not on a random act of conservation, but on solutions in watersheds. If we're going to spend limited dollars, we have to have some sort of accountability. And I'm really disappointed that a lot of elected officials are not talking about accountability at the state level. I mean, the governor should be that way because we're spending limited dollars on giving funds to the farmers, and we should have some sort of accountability on how the money is spent and the results. And Governor Reynolds wants to make water quality a priority, and I think a lot of the Republicans and Democrats are going to say water quality is a priority. It's meaningful, and then we need to make sure that they prove it. Well, if we're going to be spending millions of dollars on reducing or eliminating runoff and keeping soil on our land, we should be able to monitor that, and we should be able to quantify it and then tell the public, like, this is how such and such watershed's doing. This is how the lower Raccoon is doing. We need to do that. And that's the first thing that's going to hit Iowa this January.
And you mentioned the House bill. Do you feel, does it have adequate accountability?
Knowing me, Pat, it's never adequate, but it is certainly superior to the Senate version, where I think it has no accountability. I mean, I'd really think it's a kind of a conservative viewpoint about how to be careful about spending scarce state resources on an important issue. But if we're going to do cost share, which we've been doing, and we're going to provide some funds to farmers to put on cover crops, we want to see what happens. How's that money? How many farmers continue to put on cover crops over the years? Let's support Iowa State when Iowa State University does research. Let's support that when they say go out and work with farmers on this and how to cut down on the amount of agriculture chemicals, keep soil on the ground. I don't think the Senate bill touches that. The Senate bill is absent, whereas the House bill at least moves in the right direction, and it will be pretty controversial. But I believe that's, and a lot, actually it's interesting because a lot of groups, including business groups and environmental groups, supported the House bill last year. They came together realizing the Senate bill was so weak.
And we've lost Leopold Center for Sustainable Agriculture. I believe that was one of, in your era as a legislator.
We lost the funding for the Leopold Center for Sustainable Agriculture. The Leopold Center is still alive, and I look forward to the president of the university helping, because President Winterson knows about the Leopold Center. I think there's an option. There's students and grad students and alumni who are really behind the Leopold Center. It's interesting. It's a non-regulatory solution. And so I think people need to keep it forward, saying this is a solution that worked. 30 years ago, when the Leopold Center was created, it received national attention. It received such attention that many states moved to replicate it. What a great honor that other states said, we need to have a center like the Leopold Center at our state institutions. And it achieved many, many goals. The legislature made up reasons why the Leopold Center should not be funded, misled the public. I mean, it's an embarrassing that we're just ignoring this, and what the president's doing is moving backwards. I mean, we have a treasure trove of people in Iowa who created not just state, national park systems and national monuments. I think President Teddy Roosevelt would be rolling over, with all due respect, if he saw what was happening to our natural resources.
Is there anything else that you would like to see addressed with the upcoming forum on Monday evening? Senator Johnson will be presenting as the only remaining author of the Master Matrix Regulatory Framework for these confinement animal feeding operations.
Well, I compliment people for putting on this water quality forum. That is something that can be done, and I hope the media also gets the word out. I think people can learn from this on how to approach elected officials, because there's going to be a lot of questions. I look at the list of panelists who are very strong panelists and who will be able to point out many of the criticisms of some of the existing laws that would protect our water and land. Moderator Kevin Tekau was a wonderful U.S. attorney. He's no longer U.S. attorney. He was appointed by President Obama. Now he's in the private sector. He did not forget that part of his job was enforcing federal laws that include laws that protect our water and land. And Kevin was not ashamed, was not embarrassed, and was willing to go after polluters. And if you look at his history, it shines, especially in contrast, let's say, to the current EPA Administrator Pruitt, who makes up science, which is another thing we can do. We can approach the climate change or whatever in many different ways. So I hope people take away information on and propose solutions and approach. Not every senator in Iowa wants to change, and we just need to keep up the pressure. So I think the Water Quality Forum Monday night at City Auditorium is very good. Actually, I hope many people from the university attend as well. It's a unique opportunity because we have such a heavy emphasis on agriculture.
Well, we're hoping people can derive some sense of encouragement.
I think we should be encouraged. I'm hopeful because 5 years ago, people were denying that there was a problem with the water, and not necessarily some of our local legislators, but there were people, the lobby that we worked against, were denying it. Unfortunately, some of the large agriculture interests were denying there was a problem. I would be at the panels representing the council, and I'd be sitting next to them, and they said, oh, it's not a problem. The water's clean. No worry. Or they say, don't worry, give us time. Well, now we've learned we can't. And now we're seeing the conversation has dramatically changed. And I'm really encouraged by that. The idea of having a discussion on matrices is very encouraging. The fact that we're seeing farmers putting solar panels on their facilities, very encouraging. I don't know if it's enough, and I don't think it's fast enough, but I think it's really encouraging that the conversation has become louder and more voices are being spoken on the need to about natural resources.
Ralph Rosenberg.
Thank you,
is
Pat.
Is there anything else?
No, thank you, Pat. And thank you, KOTY, because we need to rely on this for the news, and I think it's very important.
That was Ralph Rosenberg, recently retired executive director of the Iowa Environmental Council and former state legislator, speaking with Pat Schlarbaum. They were speaking in anticipation of a forum that will be held tonight at City Auditorium in Ames on CAFOs and water quality. The forum will feature a panel of experts from around the state. If you're interested in going, the forum is open to everyone and begins at 6 p.m. City Auditorium is located at 515 Clark Avenue, part of the City Hall building in Ames. In anticipation of the forum, Pat Schlarbaum, who is helping to host the forum, also spoke with Carolyn Raffensperger, Executive Director of the Science and Environmental Health Network. She brought up the dangers of excessive manure to the health of our children, as well as the water and soil. She is actually in a unique position to empathize with farmers since she herself is a cattle farmer. Ms. Raffensperger advocates for new ways to provide financial incentive for healthy soil and water practices.
If you went out and smelled the air in the last 3 weeks, a month, it didn't smell very good often. You could smell the pig in the air, and you might not know that that is also carrying antibiotics, airborne particulates, the microbiome that's carried out on the air, and how much of a threat that is to our water. We need to get far more visionary and imaginative about the way that we go at discussing some of these problems. Mm-hmm. One of the things that seems to me is that we have not actually charged some group like the Leopold Center for Sustainable Agriculture with determining the carrying capacity of the land for something like pigs or chickens or turkeys. We have not given much thought to a healthy animal-to-land ratio. Some of you may know that I have family associations with Cushman Family Farms in North Dakota. And one of the things about the way that we manage our farm is that we think about a good land-to-animal ratio. How many animals can the land support in a healthy way? Imagine if we set a law in Iowa that said we cannot exceed the carrying capacity of the land for animals. The land needs to absorb the manure of these animals in such a way that it nourishes the land rather than causing more problems. Imagine if we began to think about that kind of carrying capacity and developed our rules so that they were biologically sound.
We repeatedly go about our business where more is better and profit margins are necessary to keep the family farm afloat.
It's an impoverished way of thinking. A mutual friend of ours, Mark Edwards, often points out that Iowa is the most biologically altered, and I paraphrase it by saying the most damaged state in the union. If we are going to decimate our water quality, if we're going to overwhelm the land with pig manure and herbicides like dicamba, new threats coming up that are destroying our oak trees and who knows what else. If we continue to do that, we will have destroyed the very basis of our own lives. Wonderful indigenous woman, a Mohawk midwife, points out that women are the first environment, and that is a water environment for our babies. And then we emerge into this water planet, and that we would treat our water with such disregard, such callous disregard, seems to actually treat our children with a disregard. I was really taken with Iowa when I moved here, and the first election, I saw all these signs that say we vote for our children. And I want to say that I vote for my neighbor's children. And my neighbors include the deer in my backyard. They include the white pelicans that fly over. They include the possible snowy owls that visit us. They include the bobcat that wander in the woods nearby. They include all of that. And until we care for the children of all of those beings, even with the way that we produce our food, we have a morally and ethically deprived way of living on this earth.
Well, on Monday, we're going to have the opportunity to listen to a panel of producers, environmentalists, conservationists, and prominent farmers. Do these type of forums bring any hope?
I think that any time that we have a conversation that brings some ideas about solutions, that we stand a better chance of mobilizing the political will to bring about change. You know, I was struck by how few of my neighbors knew what they were smelling when they were smelling the manure being spread on the fields this fall. I was really surprised. And then when they found out, they were shocked. Right now, it seems to me that if we agree that the way that we have turned a blind eye to confined animal feeding operations and other things that, you know, poison the land, pollute the land, that we're going to find new ways to go forward. You know, it seems to me that we have an obligation to the farmers as well. We have a food system that is not very kind to farmers. And if we began thinking about food as a human right, how would we treat those who produce it? We have a race to the bottom in terms of price and commodity. You know, when I think about some of these proposed solutions and permitting confined animal feeding operations in a different way, imagine that we tied some of our solutions to the contributions that they made to our health. So what if we subsidized farmers' health insurance if the water that left their farm was clean? If they got a premium on their health insurance because their contributions to the dirty water and therefore the health and poor health of Iowans, what if we started tying things like that together rather than subsidizing commodities? If we began to subsidize the contributions to clean water and clean air and rethought those kinds of policies, you know, we could go a long way to solving multiple problems at once. I think a respect for the production of food would go a long way.
That was Carolyn Raffensperger, Executive Director of the Science and Environmental Health Network, speaking about some of the concerns regarding health and agricultural practices. She was speaking in anticipation of the forum that will be held tonight at City Auditorium on CAFOs and water quality. She was speaking with Patch Larbaum, who is one of the people hosting the forum, which will begin at 6 p.m. and is open to everyone.
Your song. sea, the secrets of the water. Oh, oh, oh. Oh, your song allows me to see the secrets of the water. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What I hate.
Danit with Amanecer. And this is Local Talk. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, your host for this hour, here on KHOI, where we explore people, stories, and events in central Iowa. So what is KHOI as a community radio station? It's a broadcaster at 89.1 FM that brings you programs that we hope inform you and educate you. It's a media place that allows the issues concerning the health and welfare of our community to be discussed at length for greater understanding. It's also a physical place on Douglas Avenue. It's a storefront building where people come together. They come to collaborate, and it's a professional training center. One of the things that's been valuable to KHOI have been the interns who come from the ISU Greenlee School of Journalism. They bring in new energy, ideas, and talent, and provide continuity for getting the work done. And they walk away with skills that they can use in their careers and put on their resumes. Our most recent intern was Aaron O'Neill, who spent the past semester with us and has just left us. But before he left, he had a few words to say about KHOI, and I wanted to share some of his thoughts with you to give just a few moments of an inside look into KHOI. Here's Aaron.
I'm a journalism student at Greenlee at ISU, and this major requires that you get an internship before you graduate. They want you to put in 400 hours at a job where you're actually learning real-life skills. I came in here looking for an internship, and I was kindly greeted by a bunch of awesome people. It's actually kind of the coolest thing ever because it's such a dedicated community effort. I've never seen such a... it's so community-based. And just how hard everybody works and how dedicated everyone seems to be. People that have full-time jobs at other places still find time to come in and make their shows, and I think that's really cool. I wanted to be part of that community effort, and I also thought it would be really cool to learn all of the skills that this place could teach me. I came in looking to do photo and video work, and I'm leaving with so many more skills.
Like what?
Producing, editing across multiple platforms, photo work, video work, interviewing work. Just a ton of stuff that I didn't know I was going to learn, but I'm very happy I did.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I'll be able to take it with me. I got to make my own radio show, so I got to learn how to put that together and how to air it. I shot a lot of photos and videos for Local Talk. I got to go to a tiny house convention. I got to see some of the events that the hosts of Local Talk go to.
That's something that happens to everybody at KHOI, including me. You gained a broader awareness of the community, seeing things that you might not have seen otherwise.
Exactly. For example, there was a history event in Slater that I got to participate in. I just got back from the Salisbury House yesterday and on a full tour. Things I wouldn't have been able to do had I been elsewhere. There's also this event called Maximum Ames. It's a big concert series here in the downtown area at a bunch of different venues, but it was much more than just a concert series because there's a man named Charlie Vestal who passed away earlier in the year, and the entire festival kind of became a memorial to him. And it was probably one of the most powerful things because the entire community came together to celebrate him and his music and also just to have a great time and listen to some amazing bands.
You also have been interviewing radio hosts here.
Yeah.
You know, the Celebrity Interview Project.
It was a lot of fun. I got to know some of the hosts here much better. They're kind of promotional videos. They're to give the community a little bit better of an understanding of why our hosts do what we do and what they like doing with their shows. Carol Horowitz, who is always a ton of fun, she told me a little bit about her background from New York and what she does to make her Curtains Up and KHOI Previews the Arts program. She really showed me how dedicated that she is. She's a big backer of the station and really wants to make a difference for the arts here in Ames. I also interviewed Alan Gildy. He's also a lot of fun. He has a program called Rock of the Ages. I got to talk to him about his favorite music and why he enjoys doing his show so much.
One of the things that you've been doing as part of your internship is to develop a YouTube channel for KHOI.
YouTube is basically a site where you can watch any kind of video that you want. And KHOI now has a channel, which is basically a section filled with all of the content that we put up. To find this channel, you can go to youtube.com, youtube.com, and just type in the search bar Ames Community Radio. And on there, if you search that term, then you'll find a icon with our KHOI logo on it. And if you click on that, there'll be a list of videos that we have been putting together as a station, and that includes a lot of the videos that I've shot. There's videos on the Pantorium sessions that we do, the monthly Pantorium sessions, different local artists. You can see Alan Gildahouse and Carol Horowitz about their shows.
And you also have the videos that you made for Local Talk on there, too?
Exactly. I believe three videos are up there of the different events that I've been able to go to with Local Talk. The Tiny House Convention, the Slater History Museum, and the Salisbury House video, where we took a tour and got to learn about a lot of the history.
This is kind of a new territory where KHOI is branching into. How does it feel to start a whole new department of KHOI?
It feels really good. It feels like I was able to really make a difference. When I came in, the YouTube channel was actually existing, but there was only one video on there.
Which was our Kickstarter video, right? Which
yeah.
was, we made when we wanted to build the station.
Yeah, it goes way back. I think it's like 5 years old. And I got the chance to go in there and update all of the info and add a bunch of this content. And it feels like we really have a good visual element for people to come check out if they are interested in the station. People my age, they definitely have a place. They can definitely leave their mark here. It's a great place for that. We grew up with the internet, so it's kind of just second nature for us to, if we like something, go look it up online, go find out more about it like that.
You've been working in close quarters with baby boomers and even older. We have some people here that are much older than baby boomers. How's that been?
It's been great. Everyone's super nice. I've loved all my coworkers. Technology is pretty much the only barrier that I see to the older generations. Some of the older members have a little bit of trouble picking up the nuances of the technology that we work with.
They have a deer in the headlight response?
A little bit, yeah. Because it's just not second nature. They didn't grow up with it like my generation did. It just takes talking to them and being patient and sitting down and showing them how to do it. And other than that, they're used to talking with you face-to-face. So that actually is a little bit better of a way to communicate. They're not used to just going right to their phones or right to messaging you over email. It's kind of refreshing. It's nice.
You know, you're coming now to the end of your internship, and we're going to miss you. Are you passing on the YouTube channel work you've done?
Yeah, we have another intern coming in named Jackie Norman. She will be taking over doing some of the work that I did. So hopefully she can take it and grow it just as we have here, and hopefully even do more with it.
And you're hearing an interview with Aaron O'Neill, who is KHOI's most recent intern. He's just finishing his internship as the semester comes to a close at the end of the year. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, and it's been my job as station manager to supervise Aaron, which has been a great pleasure in this case. Aaron, tell us just a little bit about yourself. You're an Iowan?
I am an Iowan. I was born in Sioux City. I currently live in Clive. It's a little town in Des Moines. My dad coaches at a high school in Des Moines. My mom works for a catering company.
Are they proud of the work you're doing?
Yeah, definitely. They've tuned in for the shows I've done, too, and they thought it was super cool to hear.
Did they look at your YouTube channels?
Yeah, they've watched some of my videos, and they're always pretty impressed.
And it has to be said, there's more of you. You have a spectacular sister who's done some really beautiful graphic work for KHOI.
Yeah, she's definitely an artist by heart. So,
Madison. And you're leaving Ames?
I went to DMAC for 2 years, and I'm just finishing 2 years here at Iowa State.
What do you want to do?
I want to work in some form of media. I like the smaller community-based places like KHOI. I've applied at Iowa Public Radio, Iowa Public Television, and other radio groups in Des Moines.
And it's a time-honored tradition in community radio to function as a gateway for people that want to work in public radio or public television.
Yeah,
it's one of the ways that community radio serves, as to provide that entry point for people who want to do media.
I can definitely see why.
And you're probably going to get some of the best training because community radio has to work so hard.
Definitely. Everyone does everything.
Your favorite memory?
Definitely airing the first show on the station. It was the membership week, so we had to fill programming that included pitches. I got the opportunity to put together a playlist of some of my favorite music, and I was here in the studio when it aired. It wasn't live, but I was in the studio listening to it to make sure everything went well, and just the anticipation of sitting in the studio waiting for my first broadcast was so much fun and something I'm going to remember for a long time.
There's a magic about broadcasting, isn't there?
Absolutely, yeah. Actually putting music out over the radio, it feels like you're really becoming one with the city that you're in. It's something technology can't beat.
You literally become part of the physical environment. It's on the level of electromagnetic waves, but it is part of the environment. It's part of the natural world.
Absolutely.
Yeah. If a fellow journalism student mentioned to you that they were considering doing an internship at KHOI, what would you say to them? How would you describe the experience?
I would definitely recommend that they come in. It was a lot of fun. I learned a lot of really good skills that I know I'll be able to take on with me. They're skills that I didn't even expect to learn, and I've already even passed on recommendations to friends and to people that I've talked to at Iowa State. It's been a fantastic semester.
It's gone both ways. Thank you for your work here. You've been a real pleasure to work with.
Thank you very much. That means a lot.
We're going to miss you.
I'm going to miss it here, too. You guys have been awesome.
That was Aaron O'Neill, KHOI's most recent departing intern. We're looking forward to the three new interns who will be arriving this next school semester and are excited to see what they will do. Please remember that this is KHOI's fundraising period of the year, and go to KHOIFM.org and make your membership donation to be part of this exciting media called community radio. We're also excited to be entering into a partnership with the Iowa State Daily starting in January. We'll be teaching a class for Iowa State students on how to make podcasts. It's all part of the community audio teaching facility KHOI is building up, which we are calling the Audio Lab. We also have received a grant from the City Council on the Arts for a section of the Audio Lab, which we're calling Soundscapes, that addresses just pure audio as fine art. We have monthly classes where we invite you to join us for free. Learn audio editing just for the fun of collecting environmental sounds and putting together interesting audio pieces. If you're interested in being part of the Soundscape project, coming to one of our classes, call us at 515-292-2878, 515-292-2878, and either speak with somebody here or leave a message saying, I would like to be part of Soundscapes. This is where you can reach me. As we embrace the future, we invite you to join us in this really exciting media collaboration called Community Radio. Go to KHOIFM.org and make your membership donation. And as we look into a bright future, we also honor the past. And one of the ways we did this was to recently give an award to our chief operator, Mr. Paul Nelson, who really was one of the people that made KHOI possible. He's also a member of the Ames community, loved by many. Paul is not well these days, and so I went to his house to speak to him. Kind of a beautiful story, his experience as a community organizer in media, and I want to share it with you.
I'm Paul Nelson, chief engineer for KHOI Community Radio.
Why did you agree to even get involved?
Well, radio has always been a part of my life. I've been an amateur radio operator for many, many years, as was my father before me, and I had been retired for about a year.
You've spent a significant amount of your retirement time actually working on KHOI. You helped us get the station on the air because it's been a lot of work. Are you glad that you dedicated so much of your retirement time to the station or not?
I am glad. First of all, I learned a lot of things that were new to me that I never would have learned otherwise. I used some of my education that I never would have used otherwise, I think.
You were an engineer as a profession?
Yeah, I was a so-called manufacturing engineer, production engineer, and out at my company, Sauer Danfoss, which is now Danfoss, it was my job to design production test equipment and to integrate computers and electronics into that equipment so it all worked together automatically. Industrial automation, that sort of thing. And to that extent, I found it an easy transition. When I got involved with the radio station, it was still headquartered at the Baptist Church, and it was a sort of an internet radio station. The challenges of taking this thing from that kind of activity to a full-fledged radio station, I think it appealed to my sense of utter futility.
Futility? Why do you say futility?
That's just a joke, really. it appealed to my sense of a complex project, one that needed a lot of different disciplines and that didn't have all of those disciplines right there.
That's
so,
for sure.
So I agreed to get involved, and I tried to make myself useful wherever I could, but it was very, very shortly that I got really heavily involved with developing the tower site and then finding a suitable transmitter shelter, which was a great breakthrough. That cost us $9,000, and it was the first money, I think, that we actually spent, the first big purchase we made. Mm-hmm. And it really felt good, because it felt like once we had that thing, could a radio station not follow?
Oh, well.
And then there was negotiating the tower lease with American Tower. That was quite a different level of hell. But in the end, it worked out quite well. We got a very good deal on that lease.
It's a tremendous accomplishment that you're describing, that you, with the help of others, pulled off. So, I mean, it wasn't always good times. There was a lot of stress, too. But looking back so far, I mean, the journey's not over, believe me. But looking back so far with KHOI, what would you say was one of your favorite memories?
I think the most compelling thing that I can say is the day we went on the air, the days that were involved in getting the antenna up onto that tower, installing the equipment in the transmitter shelter at the base, working with the tower climbing folks and with Tom Voorhees, who came down to help us, and so did David Klan and Todd Fisher Wallen, mm-hmm. who was unfortunately passed away. Those folks just bounded down from where they were, got out of their cars, sprang into the transmitter site, went to work, and got things done.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing short of amazing.
So do you still enjoy being involved?
Very much. Very much. It's something that I never would have thought that I would be involved with. And then all of a sudden, I found myself immersed in it, and I've said before it's like drinking from a fire hose, but the water's cool and tasty, I've found. And the other thing that I have absolutely enjoyed is the people that I've found involved with community radio, the people that I have met at the grassroots radio conferences, and the people who helped us get on the air. Incredible folks. Incredible folks. Who knew they were out there? I didn't. You did. And you sucked them in here. And I think that's great. Incredible.
Community radio is seen as a volunteer project, and maybe it doesn't always register the level of accomplishment and the high level of professionalism that's involved with running an operation like this. The folks that make community radio happen are just incredibly independent people who live to a very, very high professional standard to make this happen, and often outside the realm of profit.
That's really very true. I've never met more professional people than those that I've gotten in touch with through that effort that we made.
Mm-hmm. This is kind of an example of what we're talking about. Todd was one of the engineers that helped us get on the air.
Mm-hmm. Todd Fisher Wallen.
He died suddenly last summer from an accident, and I went to his funeral in Wisconsin. At his funeral, people were relating their memories, and one of his friends was describing a cross-country trip he took with Todd, where Todd insisted driving 50 miles an hour the whole time and drove his friend crazy, he said, because Todd didn't want to break the law. And the next person that stood up said Todd wasn't driving 50 miles an hour because of any law. He was driving 50 miles an hour because that is the speed at which the highest efficiency is for using gasoline. And everybody was like, oh, yeah, that sounds exactly right.
That's exactly right. Your comment about the volunteer nature of community radio, sometimes I wonder how these people live.
Community radio is a system that really, to a large extent, lives outside of personal financial gain.
It does.
And a lot of the syndicated programs you hear, the productions are done without payment, which is extraordinary because the productions are excellent.
They really are top-notch. The syndicated programs that we carry on KHOI are nothing but top-notch.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a good word to describe community radio people. They're top-notch.
Oh, I'd agree. Mm-hmm. It's amazing.
Yeah. Last month, we had a party where you were honored for your contributions to KHOI. One of the odd things that happened is, in our enthusiasm, we neglected to ask you to give your 2 cents, even though you were there. I felt like something was missing, and I couldn't put my finger on it until shortly after the ceremony, and then I realized that I and everybody else would have really liked to hear your thoughts at the time. So I guess what I'd like to do is ask you what you would have said that afternoon if we had, you know, made room for that in the ceremony.
Well, interestingly, I had talked with Eric Weber earlier in the afternoon and had told him that when my turn to do a rebuttal came up, I was planning on calling him out and roasting him a little bit. Eric Weber is our assistant chief engineer, who actually is doing most of the heavy work these days because I'm not feeling well. Eric is a superb radio engineer. He just retired a couple of years ago from a career of a radio officer on board cargo ships. He was in charge of basically everything electronic on these huge container ships. He's knowledgeable in pretty much everything you can ask him to be, and it's been a real privilege to work with him, an absolutely real privilege.
You said you learned things.
Working with Eric and now with Evan as well is a pleasant thing to do. These guys know what they're doing, and they are easy to get along with. Been a lot of fun.
What's something that you learned?
How thick the FCC regulations are, and how
people think we make that up,
and how densely they are printed. That's an incredible thing. I'll give you one example. In terms of emergency operation, or let's say what to do when the power goes out, or the transmitter goes off, or we don't have audio or whatever. There's a voluminous portion of those regulations that deal with those kinds of issues. And I remember Roger Parmenter and I, and later Eric, poring over those regulations, trying to figure just what we absolutely had to buy and install to make things legal at the transmitter site. Sometimes there weren't very clear answers. Mm-hmm. But I think what we finally did out there at the transmitter site does hold its own, because a number of times that we've lost power out there for a considerable period of time, and when power comes back, everything comes up automatically, and we're back on the air. Mm-hmm. And that pleases me no end. It saves a lot of gas.
So, Paul, we definitely are not done yet. There's lots of work to do.
Oh, Lord.
And we expect you to continue to help us with that. But at this point in the road, what wisdom can you impart?
I think, like many people who frequent the Pantorium, I don't have a clue what will make that enterprise work better than it does. But we need more funding. We're starting to get some real recognition.
Give the person listening, why should they support KHOI? We are still raising money.
Yeah.
We still need more money before the end of the year.
Yeah.
What reason can you give for somebody to become a member of KHOI and make a donation?
KHOI provides a voice that is not heard anywhere else in Iowa.
You were really one of the people that built KHOI.
Yeah.
You know, when we say this is a precious enterprise and has really been the labor of not only top-notch effort, but also intentions of integrity and altruism, you saw the process and everything that was involved. So you can really, in a sense, testify that, in fact, those words really are very true in this case. This is not a spin. This is what it is.
You are absolutely right. a sell job or a spin job. It is not. The concept of volunteerism and the concept of caring, the concept of
wanting to make a better world, right?
Wanting to make a better world, of bringing voices to the public that have no other chance of being heard. Some of the most important things that I think that we can possibly do. And to this point, it had not been done. KHOI is providing a real service there, and it's a service that I'm constantly in awe of.
Do you think we're helping to build community in Central Iowa?
I do, very much.
That's Mr. Paul Nelson, KHOI's chief engineer and chief operator. And you've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I've been your host today, Ursula Rudenberg. Thank you for listening. Earlier we heard from Mr. Pat Schlarbaum, Carolyn Raffensperger, Ralph Rosenberg, Aaron O'Neill, and a roundup of Iowa news by the Iowa Informer, iowainformer.com. Local Talk airs at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. here on KHOI. Also remember that you can hear it online at khoifm.org. KHOI is streaming live at khoifm.org. Remember that you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Make your donation at khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org. And thank you for listening. We'll see you again on the radio.
Funding for KHOI Radio is provided in part by the Ames Chamber of Commerce. We encourage you to shop local this holiday season. You can support Ames' growth while enjoying the wide array of local shopping and dining experiences that Ames independent businesses offer. From the Ames Chamber of Commerce, happy holidays. Let's shop local and grow Ames.